This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of December 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 14th of December 2017, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Liddiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The headlines this week are Silver Hill 2 plans go on tour of district, new pilot to help troubled benefits scheme, and council defies protest over 5,000 homes. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Silver Hill 2 plans go on tour of district. Details of how people can have their say on a major project to transform Winchester city centre have been released as the scheme takes a step closer. Winchester City Council's Cabinet unanimously approved the decision to submit the Silver Hill 2 plans for formal consultation at a meeting last week. Officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, abbreviated to CWR, the scheme's draft supplementary planning document, again reduced to SPD, will now be put to the public to comment on. Formally launched on Monday at a public exhibition in Winchester Guildhall, the consultation will see the plans going on a tour of the district next month, starting in Orsford on Wednesday, January 10th. The plans will then spend 4 days on display in various locations around Winchester, before stopping off in Bishop's Waltham on Monday, January the 15th. The project follows the collapse of a previous multi-million pound scheme to regenerate the Silver Hill area of the city. One of the main objections against the first scheme was that it was too bulky, looming over the city centre. The current SPD envisages a less domineering scheme, which also retains the antique market. Council leader Caroline Horrell, who is also chairman of the informal policy group known as the IPG, which worked with architects JTP to produce the draft SPD, said, "I'm thrilled that we are now in a position to formally consult on the planning guidance framework. There has been significant engagement already, and so I'm hopeful that residents share my excitement about our partnership work becoming a reality to create a great new vibrant city centre to our city. I would like to thank my fellow IPG members, officers and JTP for their hard work and commitment to making this as inclusive as possible. The formal consultation will run until noon on Monday, February the 5th. For more information about the consultation, visit the Winchester City Council website. Copies of the draft SPD can also be viewed in libraries in Winchester, New Orsford, Bishop's Waltham, Waterlooville, East Lee, Chandler's Ford, Fareham and Romsey. Silver Hill 2 formal consultation tour details, Orsford Community Centre, January the 10th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. The Brooks Shopping Centre, Winchester, January the 11th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Winchester Train Station, January the 12th, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. The Brooks Shopping Centre, January the 13th, 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. St. Maurice Covert off Winchester High Street, January the 14th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. King's Church, Bishop's Waltham, January the 15th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.
New pilot to help troubled benefits scheme. Civic chiefs in Winchester have launched a groundbreaking pilot scheme to help residents struggling to deal with the transition to universal credit. The three-month-long Winchester First, launched by Winchester City Council, aims to support residents transitioning onto the new benefit system. It will see a group of residents in the city due to receive universal credit issued with a MasterCard account that their benefits will be paid into. However, the account will have a special wallet that will hold housing benefit funds to ensure there is enough money left for residents to pay rent each month, which may solve one of the criticisms levelled against the government system. The scheme was unveiled by the City Council's portfolio holder for finance, Guy Ashton, at a cabinet meeting last week, and is the brainchild of the City Council's benefits and welfare team. Mr. Ashton said, "Winchester City Council is taking the lead in providing a positive and empowering level of support, education and assistance to its residents as they transition to universal credit. By creating an imaginative and groundbreaking programme, the council is building a way of making universal credit work better for our residents. I hope that our pilot programme will inspire other local authorities to learn and participate in similar schemes." Mr. Ashton added that the pilot will see thousands of residents who are struggling under the benefit system helped, and that the Department for Work and Pensions, DWP, would be paying close attention to the results. As part of the staggered rollout of universal credit nationwide, Winchester is due to begin using universal credit from July 2018. The new system was first announced in November 2010 by the then Conservative Work and Pensions Secretary Ian Duncan Smith. It has faced fierce criticism for a number of issues, including that 1.4 million people would be made worse off, according to independent analysis. Concerns have been raised about the impact on self-employed people, long waits to get the benefit paid to new claimants, as well as the change in the way housing benefit money is handled, leaving some people struggling to pay their rent or put food on the table. Under the housing benefit system, the funds could go directly to landlords to ensure that rent got paid. But under universal credit, the entire amount is handed to the claimant, particularly impacting those who struggle to manage their money. As a result, there have been reports of landlords refusing to take on universal credit claimants. The aim the benefit system changes were to encourage more people to get into work and punish those sponging off the benefit system, as well as rolling the various out-of-work benefits and in-work supports, including housing benefit, into one monthly payment. A Winchester City Council spokeswoman said that in addition to the pilot scheme, it would be offering residents banking and budgeting awareness workshops.
Council defies protest over 5,000 homes. This is just the start of a long battle and we're not going to give up. Residents have vowed to keep fighting Eastleigh councillors' decision to back plans to build 5,200 homes, plus shops, schools and a new access road near the ancient woodland south of Coldon Common. Hundreds packed a meeting at the Aegeus Bowl on Monday evening, where councillors were urged to drop plans dubbed a disaster for young generations and the environment. During a six-hour meeting, which finished at 1 a.m, more than 30 residents stepped forward to tell civic chiefs that Eastleigh deserves better than what they have proposed. Members Action Against Destructive Development, that's ADD, warmed up the atmosphere by singing a special song before the meeting, highlighting the impact the plans will have on the environment and traffic. Despite protests, councillors voted in favour of a plan. John Lowery, a member of ADD, said, "We are not to give up. Councillors will not listen to what people really care about, but they have no evidence to say that these are the best options. This is just the start of a long battle, and we'll prepare to tell the planning inspectorate what we really think about the plan." During the meeting, residents and opposition councillors agreed that the plan is likely to be found unsound by a planning inspector. But council leader Keith House said, "The council listened carefully to residents on Monday's meeting, but could not agree to do anything other than take the responsible decision but to progress the plan with the local plan." Councillor House stressed that there was enough evidence to make the decision and the authority has a responsibility to get the right homes in the right places. Judith Grosgrieski, leader of the Conservative group, said, "The voting was premature and undemocratic." She said, "Councillors are elected to represent all residents equitably, but residents have been ignored by the council." The decision comes after civic chiefs were told that they had a 10-week plan to explain why they did not have a local plan on housing or face the government stepping in to do it for them.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements, which will be followed by Christian comment. Badcock, Colin Francis Badcock, on the 2nd of December. Bauer, Eileen Rose Bauer, aged 91. Finn, Andrew, known as Mick Finn, on the 6th of December, aged 81. Hayward, Evelyn Hayward, on the 15th of November at Millway House, Way Hill. Lovett, Maureen Kate Lovett, née Dowling, formerly Haynes, at Waypoints Care Home, Upton Pool, on the 8th of December, aged 72. Taylor, Barbara Marie Taylor, on the 4th of December, aged 91. Wheeler, Janet Wheeler, née Smith, in hospital on the 29th of November, aged 73. Williams, Arthur Williams, known as Bill, at Valley Lodge Care Home, Chandler's Ford, on the 3rd of December, aged 96. Wright, Jackie Wright, on the 3rd of December, aged 55.
Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, and he entitles it Happy Cancerversary. This week, we received a WhatsApp message from our daughter wishing my wife Sue a happy cancerversary. It was 4 years ago on the 11/12/13. Now that's easy to remember, isn't it? The 11th of December 2013, that Sue was diagnosed with breast cancer. We had an appointment at the hospital after a routine scan and sat waiting for the results in the midst of a variety of people, young and older, each dealing with various stages of the disease. Two by two, each cancer patient with their carer went into the consulting rooms, and two by two, they came out. One couple came out with joy spread all over their faces. Most didn't. We wondered whether the result waiting for us would be a happy one or a sad one. We had hardly sat down on the chairs opposite the consultant before the doctor announced, "You've got cancer." And so began a period of constant waiting. Waiting for another consultation. Waiting for results. Waiting for surgery. Waiting for the results. Waiting for radiotherapy. Waiting for the results. waiting for a consultation to work out what to do next. We were always waiting. We learnt to live without knowing everything, without being in control. The four-week period leading up to Christmas is what Christians call Advent. It's a period of waiting. Waiting for Jesus to come, to celebrate him being born as a baby, born to be saviour of the world. And also waiting for Jesus' second coming as judge of all the earth. One of the Bible verses we read every day during Advent is this. Say to the anxious, be strong, fear not. Your God is coming with judgment to save you. We were pretty anxious about Sue's cancer. Her twin sister had died a few years previously of cancer, leaving her husband grieving with two small children. It was impossible not to think, what if? We know what it means to look death in the eye, but we were encouraged by God's promises to be strong and not afraid. We were certainly relying on good judgment. The surgeon's skill and judgment was essential in making sure the cancerous cells were cut out, leaving nothing behind. The judgment of the multidisciplinary team providing care and the right medicines made us thankful for the knowledge, training and skills they had learned. They saved Sue's life. The image of God as a judge is not very popular. But God has the knowledge, the skill and the ability to remove all that is bad in our lives. He too can save us. We can be strong and not afraid, even when we live in a period of waiting. You may be in the middle of a battle with cancer. In that period of constant waiting, or perhaps you have lost a loved one to the disease. If you feel anxious, hear the message of Advent. Call upon God and pray to him, asking him to save you. And he says to you, don't be afraid. He will make you strong.
We now have letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start with the first letter,
which is from Paul A. Newman and is entitled Food for Thought at Christmas. Sir, recent correspondence following MP Steve Brine's formal opening of the Stanmore food banks and his reported sentiments recalled contrastingly radical sentiments 50 years ago of then Archbishop of Recife in Brazil, Helder Camara. When I fed the poor, they called me a saint. When I asked why the poor are poor, they called me a communist. Former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, preached last month in Westminster Abbey on the centenary of Oscar Romero's birth, another bishop, saint and prophet, but one murdered by the rich, powerful and corrupt in El Salvador in 1980. Rowan's sermon may be read via the following link and bears reflection as food for thought by all who might claim the appellation of Christian or religious, particularly as we approach the season of goodwill. The link is www.indcatholicnews.com/news/ 33469. I'll read that again, and it's all lowercase. www.indcatholicnews.com www.cranworth.com/news/33469. And that letter is from Paul A. Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
The next letter is from Bob Whitmarsh and it's headed Light Railway. Sir, we all know that Winchester suffers from excessive traffic, especially in the centre of town. While some of this is through traffic, a substantial amount is very likely generated by those living within 4 kilometres of the centre who come to work, to shop or for other reasons. Regrettably, I cannot substantiate this assumption. The government has recently announced a bold programme of funding for railway infrastructure. We will look at other opportunities to restore capacity lost under the Beeching and British Rail cuts of the 1960s and the 1970s, where they unlock development and growth and offer value for money. That was a quote from Chris Grayling in Hansard, November the 29th. Winchester used to have two once-connected railway lines. The Newbury line was closed in 1960, but remnants of the route can still be seen in the town today, for example, along Barfield Close. I suggest that the modern railway and parts of the Newbury line are reconnected to form a light rail or tram system, such as is used in at least 8 other UK cities. This could be designed to form a continuous elongated loop from near the junction 11 Park and Ride in the south to just south of the A34 near Headbourne Worthy in the north. If this were feasible, at a stroke it would pass within a 10-minute walk, that's 500 metres, of going clockwise, junction 11, Badger Farm, Stanmore, St Cross, the University, Station Approach, Barton Farm, Headbourne Worthy, Winnell, the Bar in Sport and Leisure Park and St Catherine's Hill. Now, I'm sure that many practical objections can be raised, but also that, with imagination, they may be overcome. I appreciate that the City Council probably has more than enough developments to consider at the moment, but could the novel concept of a light railway oblique tram system be incorporated in the City of Winchester movement strategy, which currently appears to be entirely directed at roads? This proposal, while exploiting Winchester's almost unique infrastructure, would connect many outlying parts of the town with the central area. It could relieve the centre of considerable traffic and air pollution while having the potential to attract government funding. That letter is from Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Week, Winchester.
Graham Petty's letter is entitled Badge Abuse. Sir, is anything happening to prevent the flagrant abuse of the blue badge system, intended to make parking more convenient for the genuinely disabled? Which of us has not regularly seen cars being parked in the specially reserved bays, often avoiding a charge, only to see a perfectly fit driver display a blue badge, then walk away as ably as the rest of us? Who authorises the issue of the badge? Who is responsible for policing its use? And is it for use only when the disabled person for whom it was issued is in the vehicle? Graham Petty, Woodpeckers Drive, Week, Winchester.
Councillor Kim Gottlieb writes about a sporting division. Sir, with a new consultation on the proposed Bar End Sports Centre underway, I thought it might help to explain that there are two schools of thought within the City Council. The view held by Cabinet is that in addition to a 50-metre pool, the centre should include an 8-court-sized sports hall. Sports halls are measured by the number of badminton courts. The other view, which I share, is that it should be a 12-court hall. The debate is how big does it need to be to accommodate netball, basketball, badminton, indoor football, gymnastics and all the other sports that would typically use the hall, often together. The 8-court school says that there is enough space elsewhere in the district and that there are cost issues. whilst the 12-court school says that all the sports clubs want the larger hall and that the cost difference over the lifetime of the centre is nominal. There are several points of contention, such as the reliability of the data being used, much of which, according to the 12-court school, is too theoretical and based on generic modelling rather than on real-life local research. Another point of contention is whether full council will get a vote on what will be built. The council voted last year to build a 12-court hall, and many think that if that decision is to be reversed, then it ought to be made by the 45 members in full council rather than by the 8 members in cabinet or by the 3 voting members on the Sport and Leisure Committee. There are good arguments being made by both schools of thought, but to me, even if the larger hall isn't immediately full at peak hours from the outset, many say it will be, it should be a no-brainer to recognise that a larger hall would provide additional flexibility and the capacity to grow over the 40-year lifetime of the centre. Sport is one of the most positive and levelling features of modern society and has become increasingly important for all people across the social spectrum and of all ages. I would encourage all to respond to the consultation. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, East Stratton, Mitcheldever.
Adrian Reeves writes on the same subject, and it's headed Need for 12 Courts. Sir, the Winchester Fitness and Sports Club has 450 members and provides sports and exercise classes for the 50-plus age group. We believe it plays an important role in meeting the recreation and social needs of older residents. Club members recently debated the impact of the proposed leisure park at Bar End, with members being very worried about the club's future, given the proposal to move the sporting activities to Bar End. Members understand that the current plans are to leave the tennis courts and bowls club at River Park. River Park is easily accessed. Travelling to Bar End would be more difficult, as most people live to the north and west of the city. Use of public transport would probably mean at least 2 buses to reach Bar End, and it is likely that this will encourage the use of cars. Access may well be easier for some who live outside the city. It is suggested that Winchester City Council should carry out a traffic oblique access survey of those people currently making use of River Park, and not just the car park. This should answer whether or not Bar End will reduce traffic movements through the city centre. Will a shuttle bus service be provided from the train station, the bus station and the existing site? It appears that the new leisure park is being provided for the convenience of the university and the wider area rather than local people. A minority of our members are in favour of the move. Of concern to both movers and remainers is the current plan for an 8-court sports hall. The club currently has members queuing to get on court, and I'm aware that some leave the premises rather than wait. The current facility was built when the population of Winchester was much smaller than now. With the number of additional homes planned, there will be an even greater need over the next few years. If an 8-court sports hall is built, when there is a definite need for a larger facility, then this will represent a significant missed opportunity. And that was written by Adrian Reeves, who's the chairman of the club, a Greyshot Close Hairstock, Winchester.
Derek Pickett's letter is entitled Bollards. I'm sure they're quite genuine ones. Sir, on behalf of the people of Winchester, shouldn't the council write to ISIS, and I have no idea what ISIS stands for, a letter
Islamic State in... It's the Islamic fundamentalist movement fighting in Iraq and Syria.
Yeah.
I see. So I don't know whether you heard that, but yeah. On behalf of the people of Winchester, shouldn't the council write to ISIS a letter of thanks for their contribution to a lifestyle change in the form of the concrete bollards that now encapsulate the city centre, as mentioned in the Chronicle of December 7th? Such a pity, though, that the street cobbles have not been removed also and replaced with slabs again of concrete in order to complement the beauty of the bollards. Yes, whenever the name of Winchester is spoken, it will always be synonymous with courage and, like this letter, good taste. So writes Derek Pickett of Ash Tree Road, Andover.
Now, this letter from a chap called P. Windsor Aubrey is entitled Legoland. Sir, it seems to me that there appears to be universal condemnation of our planners to route traffic through Barton Farm. An absolutely crass decision. What also strikes many of us is the crass design of Barton Farm housing. Our city planners would, I suggest, like to condemn us to Legoland. Barton Farm would secure the epithet of Barton Farm Major, and the development in Kingsworthy at Loveden Lane would be runner-up as Legoland Minor. We have the Silver Hill fiasco and the highly critical report on the earlier proposals, to be followed by another shortcoming at the station. Winchester does deserve better. It begs the question inevitably as to whether our planners are fit for purpose. I surmise that there is a complete dearth of imagination, failure to force developers into creativity, and ultimately a lack of leadership. What is even more depressing is the City Council Planning Committee appears to endorse this crass incompetence. Someone needs to get a grip of this continuing inadequacy. So writes P. Windsor Aubrey, Lovett Walk, Hairstock, Winchester.
And sort of on the same subject, Bob Martin writes, Board Houses, B-O-A-R-D, Board Houses. Sir, how shallow of A. Fife and others to describe the new houses pictured at Badger Farm, as Barton Farm, as Lego houses. That's Chronicle Letters, December the 7th. Can they not see that they are as yet unfinished? Clearly Carla Holmes are planning to paint them green, so that they can form pieces for a full-size Winchester Monopoly board game. That's written by Bob Martin, Parliament Place, Oliver's Battery, Winchester. And there is a photograph of the, which is headed Lego or Monopoly Houses at Barton Farm. And those of you who either remember or are familiar with the Monopoly houses will recall them as being very simple, sort of dual-pitched green houses. And if these are painted green, they would be very similar to those.
That concludes the letter. Just to reiterate, the ISIS referred to in the letter about the bollards, Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, and usually referred to as so-called Islamic State.
Yeah.
Right, we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 150 and 25 years ago.
100 years ago, on Saturday, December the 15th, 1917. Considerable interest was taken on Monday at the Winchester Fat Stock Market in the sale of a porker by auction by the mayor on behalf of the Fund for Providing Christmas Comforts for the Wounded Soldiers in the Hospital at Winchester. The pig had been given by Mr. W. Hillary of Mitchell-Dever, and it occupied a pen by itself, being adorned with ribbons of the national colours. At 2:30 p.m., the mayor mounted the rostrum, and after a few observations of a more or less humorous character, asked for biddings, remarking that the object for which the pig was being sold needed no introduction and no commendation. The first bid was then made, being for £1. The offers rose to £2, £3, and £3.10. At this figure, it was bought by Mr. J. Compton of Standen Hursley, who generously put it up for sale again.
And then 50 years ago, Saturday, December the 9th, 1967. The white spotted deer has lots of everything. This line from one of the poems suggested the theme of a recital given in Winchester Cathedral last Sunday by a representative group of young people from Hampshire schools holding junior exhibition in speech and drama. The poems were about and from emergent countries and the dispossessed people of the earth, written by white and coloured poets from all over the world, poems sometimes bitter, always moving, often compassionate and advancing towards hope. The need for understanding between races and people of the same race was a thread linking them, and this was vividly caught up by the interspersed readings from the Gospels. It was obvious that this problem lay very near the hearts of the young actors, who communicated deep concern over what the poems were about.
25 years ago was Friday, December the 11th, 1992. Clashes between M3 protesters and security team erupted this week at Dongas, near Winchester. At 7 a.m. on Wednesday, 50 security officers from Group 4 Security Limited entered the site just off Morstead Road. Their job was to secure a barbed wire perimeter so work could take place. Department of Transport spokesman Terence Gibbons said the area had to be fenced off so the turf could be removed before the road was built. The turf would then be placed on another part of Twyford Down. Mr. Gibbons described the whole operation as a conservation exercise. The protesters, however, saw Wednesday's events as wanton destruction of the Dongas, coupled with violence against themselves.
We now have a Chronicle comment, followed by Letter from Westminster, and then First Person.
The editorial comment is entitled Surviving Contact with the Enemy. Excuse me. No battle plan ever survives first contact with the enemy. So said Helmut von Moltke, the head of the Prussian army in the 19th century. May something similar soon be said about the Central Winchester Regeneration, more memorably known as Silver Hill 2. There's no doubt that there is pretty wide public support for the framework, which the City Council hopes will guide the development of the area. There is much to like about the idea. It's on a more human scale than the previous proposals put forward by first Thornfield and latterly by Henderson's. The idea to retain the Antiques Market building is a good one, making it a focal point of many lanes into the site, instead of the behemoth of flats and parking that emerged in Silver Hill 1. But here is a $64,000 question. The emerging framework is all very well, but will it survive first contact with the enemy? Of course, we're not suggesting that any potential developer is the enemy, but as Thornfield / Henderson showed, their primary focus was maximising profits for their shareholders. Commercial developers operate in the real world of hard cash. One way round this problem is for the City Council not to get into bed again with a single developer, but to break the redevelopment up into more manageable pieces. With hindsight, life would have been much easier if that decision had not been taken early on this millennium.
The letter from Westminster this week is written by George Hollingbury, who is the MP for Meon Valley. When it comes to Brexit, I have always been a cautious optimist. Yes, I voted to remain and I would do so again in the same circumstances, but equally I have always believed the UK has a perfectly reasonable future outside the EU and that there are merits for us leaving, just as there were for us remaining. To that end, I always thought we would secure an agreement on the so-called divorce bill, citizens' rights and the Irish border, even though they are tricky questions. I must say, the Prime Minister should get a great deal of credit for steering the country to this point, and she must continue the good work. Now, of course, comes the devil in the detail. Certainly there are issues around last week's document that need more discussion, but I think that is rather missing the point. It's an agreement between the EU and UK to move forward in good faith that many said wouldn't happen. It means we can move on to meaningful discussions on how we want to trade and cooperate on a range of issues for generations to come. That's very important stuff, completely agreed or not. It is momentous because it shows that a deal can be done. And in the next phase of negotiations to come, it will happen again after much talking, bluster on occasion, media speculation, compromise, briefings and manoeuvrings, both here and in the EU, because that's what finding agreement is all about. Some say this part of the Brexit negotiations will be even harder. Perhaps. But there's clearly goodwill and a desire by all parties to move forward. We are leaving the EU. That's an absolute fact. And I think this agreement has something in it for both leavers and remainers to like. Is now finally the time to come together as a country and unite for the best deal? I do hope so, and it would be very helpful. Sadly, talk now swings back to a hard or soft Brexit, but I think many people don't realise how unhelpful these terms are. They really are just insults that those with particular views have used to bash each other over the head with, and they have very little merit, in my view. As it has always been, Brexit is not hard or soft. It is just Brexit. And that is negotiating the absolute best deal Britain can get when it leaves the EU in terms of trade and cooperation with our European friends and allies. The UK wants to be free to trade with everyone, including the EU. Of course, we cannot leave and have the same terms as before. That is a nonsense. But we must negotiate hard for what suits us and the EU. And I have every faith our negotiating team can achieve this. Will it be fiendishly complex? Yes. Will there be disappointment? Almost certainly. Will both parties fall out at times? Probably. Will we reach a deal in the end and be friends with the EU? Absolutely. Moving forward, a 2-year implementation deal seems eminently sensible to give everyone time to get used to the new arrangements, and the hard work now starts again. No one is blind to the enormous difficulties, but we have made a massive leap forward, and this is very good news indeed.
Khalid Aziz writes, "The future, it's scary. In the last couple of weeks, business has taken me to Amsterdam, Cape Town and New York. Among other things, it's given me another perspective on Brexit away from the febrile atmosphere driven by a combination, the Westminster bubble and the demands of 24-hour news. Guess what? The rest of the world doesn't really care. For while Mrs. May engages with M. Juncker, there are far scarier forces in play than cross-border tariffs, and there are things coming down the track that demand much more of our attention as the earth carries on turning. I'm talking of the world of disruption being brought about by the digital age. Never mind autonomous cars and the potential eradication of 40 million taxi driving jobs across the globe. The future is all about artificial intelligence, machine learning and big data. There's a story circulating about a woman in her early 30s who was surprised to be sent a welcome to your first baby marketing pack through the post. You know, the sort of thing. Samples of baby food, nappies, etc., together with money off vouchers to help with the purchase of the myriad of stuff any modern newborn insists on, from nightlights and monitoring systems to child seats and pushchairs. Trouble was, the woman wasn't pregnant. Or so she thought, until a trip to her doctor confirmed that she was indeed 4 months gone. It turns out the delivery of the pack was triggered by so-called big data, tracking her activity on Facebook and other social media, together with her online purchases. Apparently, the big data number crunching by some artificial intelligence algorithm indicated that she was exhibiting all the behaviours of an expectant mother, even though she was consciously unaware of the impending happy event. But there's big data and there's big data. Who can be against the anonymous gathering of data from, for example, medical records? This can throw up patterns to show how effective certain drugs are and highlight differences in their efficiency for a given dosage rate between, say, men and women and people of varying ages. The digitisation of thousands of chest x-rays has led to machines far more able than even the most experienced of radiographers to read and identify accurately the early stages of lung cancer. What's more, the machines can do it many times a second, making mass scanning a real possibility. And they tend not to make mistakes. So far, so good. Where the gathering and use of big data is more worrying is when it comes to our personal finances. Traditionally, when you apply for a loan from your bank, your lender uses credit agencies to assess whether you're fit to lend to and, most important in their eyes, if you're ever likely to pay the money back. The rating agencies, in turn, can use anything from 10 to 50 so-called data points to come up with a credit score. Enter the now traditional banking disruptors, who, if you're an internet user, will tap into potentially thousands of data points, all based on your past behaviour online and offline. They say it helps them make less risky loans, which ultimately makes lending cheaper for all. But all this takes place in cyberspace. Anyone who has ever tried to appeal against an inaccurate credit rating would no doubt contemplate ending all when faced with an online digital battle. The new digital players see nothing but upside when we've only got their word to take for it. It's all moving so fast, governments and regulators are being left way behind. Scary or what? Finally, as it's almost Christmas, I thought I'd try to cheer you up. Now tell me, what's the difference between a badly dressed man on a unicycle and a well-dressed man on a bicycle? Well, the answer is attire. Oh, you won't find that one in any cracker. A happy Christmas to all our readers.
Well, it's difficult to follow that one. Must remember that joke. No special announcements this week. Lighting up times, sunrise is around just after 8 o'clock in the morning and sunset is around 4 o'clock in the afternoon currently. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems yourself with the recordings you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Better bus services over the festive period. Stagecoach has announced its services for Christmas and the New Year. The firm is making it easier for people to get around over the festive season with improved levels of services over Christmas and New Year, with Christmas Day being the only day where buses are not operated. Buses will run on New Year's Day as the company recognises that people still wish to get out and visit friends and family and get to work. Now, the services are Sunday, December the 24th, Christmas Eve, normal Sunday service. Monday, December the 25th, Christmas Day, no service. Tuesday, December the 26th, Boxing Day, a Sunday service. Wednesday, December the 27th, a Saturday service, except routes 6A, 46 and 63, which will run a Wednesday service. Thursday, December the 28th, Saturday service, except Route 46, which will run a Thursday service. Friday, December the 29th, Saturday service, except Routes 6A, 46 and 63, which will run a Friday service. Saturday, December the 30th, normal Saturday service. Sunday, December the 31st, New Year's Eve, normal Sunday service. Monday, January the 1st, New Year's Day, a Sunday service. Tuesday, January the 2nd, normal service resumes. Now, if you can sort all that out, I admire you. Anyway, for those who want to enjoy the festive celebrations without the worry of driving, the stagecoach night rider ticket is valid for unlimited travel anywhere in the Stagecoach South network for £2.50.
MP drops in to see staff at sorting depot. Winchester MP Steve Brine has made his traditional pre-Christmas visit to the postal depot at Winnell. He dropped in early last Friday to thank the team of postmen and women dealing with the huge Christmas rush. This was the eighth year in a row that Steve has popped in before dawn to look around and chat to the team at the base on Winnell Manor Road. Steve said, "I really enjoy dropping in each December with a few treats to say thank you, not only for the professionalism with which they get the job done at Christmas, but all round the year, of course. We discussed a number of issues along the way, including the soon-to-be-implemented parking restrictions in Winnell, which rightly solves one problem for residents, but risks creating a whole other issue for those working at the depot." He added, "I'm in touch with Royal Mail and Winchester City Council to try and encourage urgent joined-up working on this one, because ultimately the smooth delivery of Winchester's mail could be adversely affected if a solution can't be found." Giles Wood, Royal Mail Delivery Office Manager, said, "Our postmen and women are working extremely hard to deliver Christmas cards, letters and parcels to people in Winchester. We are grateful that Steve visited the office to see our operation and to support the team." Last Christmas posting dates for 2017 are as follows. Wednesday, December the 20th, second class and second class signed for. Thursday, December the 21st, first class signed for and special delivery guaranteed. And Friday, December the 22nd, special delivery guaranteed, Saturday delivery.
TV's Songs of Praise. Millions of people will tune in this weekend to see carols being sung from Winchester Cathedral. The popular BBC show Songs of Praise will be broadcast from the Hampshire Church, with presenters visiting other sites around the city of Winchester. Among the carols chosen by presenters to be sung at the cathedral are O Come All Ye Faithful, Away in a Manger, When a Child is Born, and Once in Royal David's City. As well as that, presenter Sean Fletcher will visit the Hospital of St Cross to find out about their tradition of giving food to pilgrims before catching up with Debbie Thrower, a Songs of Praise presenter during the 1980s and early 1990s, and now a lay canon in the Winchester Cathedral, who lives near Alresford. Songs of Praise will be aired on BBC One at 2:15 on Sunday, December the 17th, and will be available to catch up on via BBC iPlayer afterwards.
Hundreds of special schools service. Hundreds of pupils from special schools came together for a festive celebration at Winchester Cathedral. More than 230 pupils from 15 schools brought Christmas cheer to the historic building with a retelling of the Nativity story with a modern twist. The annual event, organised by Hampshire County Council's Music Service, combined traditional carols with modern songs as well as readings by the children. The service began with a procession of banners representing all the schools taking part. The children were dressed as angels, innkeepers, shepherds, and kings. Music was provided by the Baycroft School Brass Band, the Hampshire County Junior Choir, and soloist Connor Bates on keyboard. Connor is the Hampshire Music Service Hub Scholar, which means he receives specialist training funded by an award for young people who have demonstrated high levels of music ability. Pupils from Shakespeare Junior School in East Lee sang and signed to A Child in a Manger Born. Mr. Jolly, the donkey, from Kiln Farm Riding School, also supported the storytelling with his handler, Wendy Carter. And there is a photograph of Mr. Jolly being led into Winchester Cathedral by Wendy Carter. I must say he looks very calm, and I do hope he behaved himself. The County Council Executive Member for Education, Peter Edgar, said, "The excitement among the children and young people was clearly evident and a joy to see."
Driver cut free after three-truck M3 collision. A motorway was closed in both directions and the air ambulance called after a three-vehicle crash. The M3 was shut between junctions 9 and 10 after the incident, which happened at about 11 a.m. on Friday near Highcliffe, with one person trapped inside their vehicle. Highways England described the crash as a serious collision and said an air ambulance landed on the road, which caused traffic to build in both directions. The spot was close to the location of a double fatal crash earlier this year. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue spokesperson said, "We were called at 11:04 a.m. to a road traffic collision involving three cars. Engines from Eastleigh, Winchester and Redbridge were on the scene. One person in the third vehicle became trapped and an extraction took place. A witness said that a van crashed into the back of a truck and that firefighters were trying to cut a person from the van. South Central Ambulance Service said the patient was released and taken to hospital. Watch manager at Winchester Fire Station, Kevin Robson, said the incident involved two lorries and a smaller vehicle used to paint lines on the road. The driver from a lorry was severely trapped, so it took around an hour and a half. It was a difficult extraction due to gas canisters on the back of the lorry. He had non-life-threatening injuries. He was conscious throughout. He was a very lucky boy. All the teams did well to achieve a good outcome."
Bus hits bus stop on St Cross Road. A bus company has been criticised after one of his vehicles smashed into a bus stop, nearly hitting commuters. Passers-by had to dart out of the way as Blue Star 1 collided with Romans Road stop on St Cross Road in Winchester just after 3 p.m. on Thursday. The impact was so hard that the passenger side wing mirror was ripped off, which the driver then went and collected before continuing. When quizzed about the safety of driving without the mirror, the driver claimed it wasn't important. One commuter, who did not wish to be named, has now blasted the company, claiming the driver drove erratically to make up time following the incident. "Someone was narrowly missed with a wing mirror as it smashed into the bus stop," he said. When I asked the driver, he said the mirror wasn't important. "Someone could easily have been hit," he added. "From the impact force, at least two people on board the bus sustained minor injuries, but we never even got an apology or were asked if we were okay." Blue Star has been contacted about the incident, but has yet to comment.
Chris Dingle at Christmas. Churches across Hampshire are inviting communities to help support vulnerable children this Christmas. The Chris Dingle services in aid of the Children's Society will be held throughout December. All the money raised is going to children who go missing from home. experience hardship abuse, or suffer from neglect. Families and communities are invited to join in the traditional christening event by lighting a candle, decorating an orange, and highlighting the Christmas story. For almost half a century, around 1 million people have been attending, with more than £1 million raised for the charity each year. Matthew Reed, its chief executive, said, "It's fantastic that so many Christingle events are happening across Hampshire to help vulnerable children. We're truly grateful to everyone who attends for their support. For many young people experiencing huge challenges in their life, on their lives, the only promise of Christmas is that the bad things in their lives will feel much worse. Some will feel so unsafe, unloved, and unable to cope that they'll run away from home. These Christingle events make it possible for us to support these young people who have better things have better lives and to make a real difference to the children in need of our help. The Children's Society is a national charity which also campaigns for changes to laws affecting young people."
Development concerns as a water garden goes on sale. Concerns have been raised that a piece of land with cathedral views could be redeveloped after it went on the market for £100,000. The water garden in Colebrook Street backs onto the walls of the Cathedral Close and features a picturesque garden with a stream running through. However, the listing by Winchester estate agents Belgarum states there may be future development potential. Nearby resident John Holder of Colebrook Place said, "The path past the pond is a critical part of the city's tourist routes, used by many tens of thousands of visitors and residents. Any development of the site would have to be incredibly sensitive, but probably foolish." Mr. Holder added, "It's almost a tourist attraction itself." The garden adjoins the home of Winchester City Council portfolio holder for finance, Guy Ashton. Councillor Ashton said, I beg your pardon, one says it Ashton, the next time it says Aston. Take your pick. Yeah. Anyway, the councillor said, "The land used to go with the house, but when we bought it in 2007, the owner wanted to keep the garden as a sort of memento." Councillor Ashton added that the land was owned by Lady Calcutt, the widow of Sir David Calcutt, before she died last year. It was then passed on to her executor, who is selling the land.
Controversial houses decision. Planners are set to decide today on a controversial proposal to demolish a house and replace it with five new homes in Winchester. The bid has drawn fierce criticism from angry neighbours who say the new homes in Stony Lane Week would cause huge amounts of damage to their lives. They argue there would be intrusions into their privacy, loss of light and green space, and an increase in traffic in the area. So far, more than 50 objections have been lodged against the planning application, including criticisms from Winchester City councillors, which will be discussed by members of Winchester City Council's planning committee today. Resident Louis Harmer, who lives in a neighbouring home, said, "The huge loss of green space in one fell swoop would be devastating. The increase in traffic onto a busy road, which will become even busier once the Barton Farm through road completes, will cause major long-term difficulties for a key feeder road into Winchester. Stony Lane is becoming a hot spot for private development opportunities, and many of us are really concerned about how it impacts those of us who actually live here. The proposal has been recommended for approval by council officers. The councillors on the committee will not have to follow their officers' advice."
Twyford Post Office relaunch. Twyford Post Office and stores held their first Christmas tasting event in their newly refurbished premises. The store, teamed up with Isle of Wight Distillery and Hambledon Vineyard, to introduce customers to its new selection of products and first floor pop-up Christmas emporium. The shop's new range of olives from Olives Direct were also on display, as well as samples of Turkish Delight, mince pies and mulled wine. The team worked hard throughout the year to source and handpick all the Christmas gifts and products from trade shows in London and local suppliers. Twyford Stores manager Anthony Plowman said, "It's important to set ourselves apart from our competitors and offer an experiential environment and shop to shop in. Our new layout and warm, welcoming store is like no other in the area. We really are lucky to continue growing in such a tempestuous retail climate." Throughout the evening, Twyford Stores director Simon Cooper showcased his new post office local module, which is open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and gave customers one-off Christmas discounts on their local Christmas meat packs, locally grown Hampshire Nordsman blue spruce Christmas trees, and local spirits and sparkling wines. Customers also took part in creating gift hampers using the shop's bespoke Hampshire service.
Civic grant boost for Emmaus. Civic chiefs have granted... Civic chiefs have granted £10,000 to Emmaus Hampshire, a Winchester-based charity. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, County Council Executive Member for Adult Social Care and Health, has made the award to the charity that provides a home and work for formerly homeless people. The grant will help provide accommodation on their Bar End site for three homeless people, adding to their existing provision, which currently houses 26. Councillor Fairhurst said, "Emmaus Hampshire offers accommodation, employment and support to some of the most vulnerable people in the community and acts as a lifeline for those who come to find shelter, advice and support. Our contribution to them will help the charity expand the support it provides to those in need. The total cost of the project is £60,000, with work expected to begin in January. Terry Butler, Emmaus chairman, said, "We are delighted to receive this generous grant, which enabled us to launch our fundraising for this important project. Hampshire County Council has supported Emmaus from our very beginnings, and we continue to value their expert advice and financial assistance. The money has come from the County Council's Supportive Communities Programme."
Festive warning after animal cruelty cases. Almost 40 calls reporting animal cruelty were made across Hampshire between Christmas Eve and Boxing Day last year. More than 2,500 cases of sick, neglected or abused animals were received by the National Animal Welfare Charity for the entire of December 2016, with 409 in Southampton. It comes as the RSPCA expects to take 2,000 calls per day nationally. The charity launched its Kindness at Christmas appeal to help thousands of animals facing neglect and cruelty during the festive season. New figures show that during December and January, the charity received 118,799 calls nationwide, which works out at more than one every minute. Of those, 2,688 calls came from Hampshire in December alone, with 39 on either Christmas Eve, Christmas Day or Boxing Day. RSPCA Superintendent Simon Osborne said, "It is a sad fact that every day at work throughout the year can be tough for our inspectors and animal welfare and collection officers, but winter really does come with its own challenges and issues. The charity expects to take in around 19,000 animals in need through December and January, from poorly, unwanted pets dumped on the street to cruelty to wildlife." He added, During the festive season alone last year, we rescued over 25,000 animals, many of whom had been cruelly abandoned, injured or abused. We expect to take in somewhere in the region of 19,000 animals this winter alone. But we also saw so many acts of kindness by animal lovers, from the passerby who rescued a shivering and sick puppy days before Christmas, to those who reported suffering animals to our cruelty hotline, or volunteers caring for animals in our centres and branches. We are asking animal lovers to show kindness this Christmas by supporting our winter appeal.
Tate resigns. A city councillor has stood down from a charity board following controversial comments, Winchester City Council's leader has confirmed. Councillor Caroline Horrell announced the decision at a meeting of the council's cabinet after Councillor Ian Tate called for the Hospital of St Cross to be converted into an upmarket hotel. He said the building was no longer fit for purpose as sheltered housing and suggested new accommodation be built for the brothers, who were the residents. Councillor Horrell said, "It has been agreed that Councillor Tate will step down and Councillor Fiona Mather will take up the position." The news follows a story in the Hampshire Chronicle which led to numerous protests and calls for him to step down.
Campaigners still trying to stop Brexit. Pro-European campaigners took to the street to demand a proper vote for MPs on the final Brexit deal. On Saturday morning, Winchester saw a strong presence of pro-European union groups. The Buttercross area of the High Street was full of EU and union flags, and many activists were distributing leaflets and talking to Christmas shoppers. The main discussions centred on giving Parliament the final say and on the NHS difficulties resulting from Brexit. In Winchester, the Hampshire European Movement, the 48% Winchester, the Liberal Democrats, the WIN-IN, that's Winchester International Network, and several others set up a joint stall by the Buttercross. More than 40 volunteers wearing something blue and waving EU and union flags attended the European Movement stand 2 days before Prime Minister Theresa May secured an agreement on Monday to move on to talks about trade. Around 230 members of the public signed the EM petition urging Steve Brine, Winchester and Chandlers Ford MP, to ensure that Parliament has an opportunity for a meaningful vote on the final deal on leaving the EU, including the option to remain if it is not up to scratch. And in a spirit of democracy, there were also some constructive discussions with a few Brexiteers, and some activists noted that the tide is turning. Winchester voted 59% to remain in the EU, one of the highest proportions in Hampshire, if not southern England. The cold and sunny morning added to the pre-Christmas occasion, as did the presence of the Porchester, Fareham and Gosport Youth Band, giving extra sound effects to the discussions on politics and Brexit. Winchester resident Alison Biden of St Giles Hill, coordinator of the campaign, said, "We were delighted to get such a strong, positive response from people. Winchester voted Remain in the referendum, and it's clear that local people still want the closest possible relationship with the EU." Michael Young, chief executive of the European Movement UK, said, "We have a right to change our minds and think again about Brexit. We do not have to leave the EU. The current parliamentary debate on the European Union withdrawal bill will shape the future of this country for generations to come, and our supporters are pushing for the optimum outcome." Mr. Young added, "People who want a different future to the one that Theresa May is offering us are joining the ranks of the European movement all the time to make a stand against Brexit. The European movement is an independent, cross-party organisation committed to keeping the UK in the EU."
Opening date set for new restaurant. The date has been set for the arrival of a new restaurant in Winchester city centre following a £800,000 transformation. Caribbean restaurant and bar Turtle Bay will be opening in St George's Street on Sunday, January the 21st, with the creation of more than 50 jobs. The new restaurant, based at the junction with Jury Street, has been holding auditions for positions, which Turtle Bay said was designed to bring out each candidate's personality. Elijah Hunter Finn, opening's project manager, said, "The auditions are an exciting couple of days and a really fun way of getting in tune with the Caribbean vibe and the essence of Turtle Bay." The chain, known for its jerk chicken and two-for-one cocktails during its happy hours, already has a branch in Southampton. The chain has 35 restaurants nationwide, including a £750,000 restaurant in Southampton's Cultural Quarter, which opened in 2011. That was Turtle Bay's second venture, following a debut opening in Milton Keynes a few months earlier. The Winchester site was formerly occupied by Tony and Guy Hair Salon at the site for more than 20 years, but the salon moved to Southgate Street in April last year, leaving the premises vacant. A spokesman for the restaurant said, "Turtle Bay creates the flavour of the Caribbean for guests as soon as they walk through the door, transporting guests into sunnier climes. Winchester diners can expect a vibrant, quirky, beach shack-inspired ray of sunshine of a restaurant. Welcoming and sociable Turtle Bay on St George's Street will have its own bespoke design, making it unique to Winchester. One of Turtle Bay's most ambitious transformations, the restaurant will be a contemporary and smart take on the Caribbean, featuring an open street kitchen, an impressive island beach shack bar."
Okay.
County Fire Service staff hailed at annual awards. Hampshire Fire bosses and crews have been celebrated at an annual awards ceremony. Members of Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service were thanked for their work as, quote, "one of the finest fire services in the world," at the Celebrating Success ceremony at its Netley headquarters. Awards ranged from organisations supporting the service to prizes for innovation, won by the I Need My Space campaign, which aimed to stop motorists blocking fire station exits. Fire Authority Chairman Chris Carter called the group, quote, "one of the finest services in the world, made up of some of the most passionate and professional people I have met."
This is in similar vein, fire at hospital. Emergency services raced to a Winchester hospital after a fire in an intensive care unit. Fire crews in seven engines were dispatched to the scene at Royal Hampshire County Hospital last Thursday. On arrival, fire crews found a small fire in an electrical cupboard within the Wainwright Ward critical care unit. Some 18 patients were moved to another part of the building. The all-clear was given less than half an hour later after crews put out the flames with an extinguisher. They donned two sets of breathing apparatus as a precaution.
Centre Dash for Sophie's Appeal. More than 100 centres suited up in Chandler's Ford for a festive fun run over the weekend in memory of a young girl. The community came together to race in a bid to raise money in memory of Sophie Barringer, who died of cancer just 6 days before Christmas in 2004. The Norwood Primary School pupil was diagnosed with Wilms disease in September 2003 and had to have major surgery to remove cancerous growths from her heart, liver and right kidney. After Sophie lost her battle with cancer, her parents, Lynn and Mike Barringer, set up the Sophie Barringer Trust, Sophie's Appeal, to keep her memory alive and support ill children. Money raised from the run, which started and finished at the 3D Health and Fitness Club in Chandler's Ford, will be used to support children at hospitals in Southampton and Winchester.
Cathedral switches on its own lights. Winchester Cathedral has turned on its Christmas tree lights, serenaded by the cathedral choristers. The Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend Catherine Ogle, led a short service blessing the lights. It means that just about every set of Christmas lights in the city centre have now been switched on. The tree inside the cathedral is perhaps the tallest in the city, only rivalled by the tree on the High Street. The cathedral is seeing the massive influx of visitors to its German-style market and to the ice rink, both in the inner close. But it is also seeing an increase in people attending the worship inside the great church at Christmas time.
Parking charge. Residents of another Winchester estate could soon have to pay to park outside their homes. The City Council is consulting on proposals to introduce parking restrictions in Winnall to tackle commuter parking clogging the roads. Similar schemes already operate in Highcliffe, Hyde, Fulflood, Abbots Barton, Wick and parts of Stanmore. The consultation runs until January the 5th, 2018, and gives residents, commuters and any other interested parties, including businesses, the chance to comment.
New addition to ADAX. Marwell Zoo has welcomed a rare new arrival, Tamarisk, an 11-week-old ADAX calf, who was born to Mother Blossom and Father George and brings the number of ADAX at the zoo to six. Now, you probably all know what an ADAX is, but I'm afraid I had to look it up. And the ADAX is also known as the white antelope or the screwhorn antelope. And it's an adult antelope of the genus ADAX, which lives in the Sahara Desert. And it was first described by Henry de Blainville in 1816. Well, the ADAX are critically endangered, with fewer than 100 left in the wild, where they are threatened by poaching and loss of habitat. There is, however, a healthy global zoo population, and Marwell is helping to introduce the species to Tunisia and conserve remaining populations in Chad and Niger.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye and a happy Christmas.
John Richards.
Goodbye and a happy Christmas from me too.
And Peter Lydiard.
Well, goodbye and a happy Christmas from me too.
And from me, John Parker, also goodbye. We will not be recording the Talking Newspaper for the next 2 weeks. That would have been on Friday the 22nd of December and Friday the 29th of December. And our next recording will be on Friday the 5th of January, just to let you know that it'll be 3 weeks before you get your next Talking Newspaper. Oh. So, from all of us here at the Winchester Talking Newspaper, we send our very best wishes for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. Okay, that's it. I'm just putting tacking the
tip top.
Top tip.
Tip tip.
Oh, hang on.
Top top.
Oh, hang on. Something's gone. Why on earth isn't it? Oh.